from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in this morning's edition, on Monday, Governor Jerry Brown signed a regional pact with Oregon, Washington State, and British Columbia to fight global warming. The pact, which is non-binding, aims to put a price on carbon dioxide emissions, encourages use of alternative fuels, and calls for building a bullet train from Canada to California. We'll discuss the agreement, and then we'll meet inventor and entrepreneur Dean Kamen, the man who gave us, among other inventions, the Segway personal transporter. He's this year's recipient of the Tech Museum's Global Humanitarian Award. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The Pacific Coast Action Plan on Climate and Energy was signed on Monday by the governors of California, Washington, Oregon, and the Prime Minister of British Columbia. Its intent is to control greenhouse gas emissions, combat global warming, put prices on carbon emissions, encourage alternative fuels and electric car adoption, and build a bullet train from Canada to California, as well as to look for ways to deal with ocean acidification. We want to focus on what is likely to be produced by this pact and what's expected to be achieved in this first half-hour forum segment. And earlier this morning, I spoke with Governor Jerry Brown, and I asked him how this pact differs from past failed efforts like the Western Climate Initiative, a proposed regional cap-and-trade program.
What's different is we've got two governors and a prime minister signing on to an agreement that commits all the different parties to working to achieve low-carbon fuel, to reducing greenhouse gases, to encourage research on matters affecting climate change. So, again, this is not an international binding treaty, but it is a very important statement of commitment, of concern, and of serious collaboration.
It's a pretty detailed 14-point program, but as you say, it's not binding. It could be reversed by another governor. Is there no joint funding mechanism, and how confident are you that it will continue?
Well, I'm confident as long as I'm around it's going to continue. But you do raise an interesting point. What's the durability of the efforts to reduce climate change? And that, of course, depends on the political climate, on the winds of change. And there was a lot of excitement about climate change and doing something about it back in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. I was there, and George Bush came, and they created a framework on climate change. And then over the next 20 years, it definitely has petered out in many sectors. So it takes continued concern and vigilance. I'm committed. My predecessor before, Arnold Schwarzenegger, was committed. These new governors have joined us, and the prime minister has a carbon tax, so that's serious. But look, reducing the carbon footprint, the greenhouse gases, that goes to our whole way of life. And we need not only new technology, but a certain measure of self-limitation. So this is heroic work. I'm not going to say we're ready to chisel our program in tablets of stone, but I am telling you, I am deadly serious about confronting the greatest existential threat that humanity has ever faced, and we're doing it in California in a very integrated way, and one that I'm going to do everything I can to spread to other states, to hook up with China and to other countries.
Does this mean, for example, that West Virginia and Ohio and coal country will be getting a stronger message, as well as, for that matter, the GOP?
Well, we have a long way to go before we get to West Virginia or other coal states or the Republican Party. We have a lot of Democratic-led states. We have a lot of other countries and subnational groups like the province of Guangdong, city of Shanghai. So there are lots of people to join in. But if the premise behind your question is that this is an uncertain venture, you bet. Tackling climate change is a long way from handled. And there's tremendous risk, and it requires not just my effort, but it requires the effort of governors and presidents and prime ministers all over the world, and it requires a sustained effort over many, many decades. So, yes, this is a modest step, which I said in announcing this pact, but it's an important one. And to the extent that I, as the governor of California, can make some impact, I will. Now, whether it will be it will turn the tide or even begin to turn a few minds, that remains to be seen. But the stakes are very high, and the interest in newspapers and conventional minds is very, very low. And so our first step is just to be able to have this conversation, and the next step is to get some of the newspapers even to print the word climate change, which some of them have an aversion to, and then from there, win minds and hearts in this profoundly important task, but one that is at best embryonic.
There was some protest, Governor Brown, I'm sure you're aware, and the critics are saying, can you really have meaningful climate change if you don't address fracking?
Well, the premise of that question, or at least that that assertion, is that climate change is primarily about fracking. And that's the most absurd idea that I've ever heard. This climate change is being affected.
Well, let me add, what I should have said was climate change pact. Can you have a really meaningful climate change pact?
This is like saying one tire in the 1 billion vehicles in the world is the problem, you know, whatever. No, fracking is a point. It's an issue. But climate change is dealing with cars, with power plants, with cows, with agriculture, with cement, with land use, with many, many things. And California has an integrated plan and an action set of efforts that we're going forward. Now, fracking, let's talk about fracking. The key point here that most people have in their minds is fracking in the Monterey Shale. Nobody's doing that. It may be, it's at best, it's several years if it ever happens. And it can't happen until a major and the first serious scientific study through an environmental impact analysis that I required by a law that I signed 2 months ago is done. And I'm supervising that analysis, and we're going to find out. And some of these fracking people, I talked to one young lady, and I said, give science a chance. She said, no, I don't need that. I studied it in college. She did not study fracking in the Monterey Shale in college because it has never been studied in any serious way before, but it will, and there will be plenty of time to make comments. The state will have to respond to each of the hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of comments. This is a big deal, and the fact that people have just pretended not to see it as a big deal shows you the utter emptiness of some of the political debate today. People don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Governor Brown, so good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Great. Nice to talk to you.
This is Governor Jerry Brown. I talked with him earlier from, he was in Sacramento. And by the way, it's the premier of British Columbia, not the prime minister. Both Governor Brown and I misspoke. Talking about California signing a West Coast climate pact with Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia to fight global warming. If you have some responses to, well, not only the West Coast climate pact, but what the governor just said, we'd certainly like to hear from you. This is a half-hour segment, so now would be a good time for you to call, and we invite you to do that. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, so again, feel free to join us now. Toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and post any questions or comments you might have, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Craig Miller's here with us in studio, science editor at KQED. We thought we'd get some reaction from you, Craig. And I guess the big question here is, since this is non-binding, you know, what comes to mind is trying to get cap and trade through the U.S. Congress. I mean, is this analogous?
Well, I think the governor was fairly forthright about the limitations of this, actually. You know, he said it commits the parties, but in fact there is no legislation tied specifically to this, just as there isn't at the national level right now. This commits the current governors and premier to a sort of shared vision of how we should attack the various multiple threats presented by climate change, but that can be easily reversed, just as happened in Arizona and New Mexico, for example, in the Western Climate Initiative, which was supposed to be a big regional cap-and-trade program with a half a dozen states and four Canadian provinces. And as soon as the governors in those states turned over, they backed out.
So where do you see this going? I mean, particularly since the governor was emphasizing in his response to one of the questions I asked how important it is for the media to maybe get some spiking up in this. Is it going to perhaps have that effect?
Well, I do think it's significant. I don't want to say that it's not significant, because you now have the whole West Coast, including the West Coast of Canada, with this shared vision of how we should attack climate change. And it is fairly sweeping, as you say. It's a 14-point plan that covers everything from emissions reductions to energy to transportation to ocean acidification. But I think the criticism of this might be that it's kind of a mile wide and an inch deep. There's a lot of action verbs throughout this agreement, like harmonize, affirm the need, coordinate with, seek opportunities, enlist support for. Action verbs that kind of leave you wondering, well, at the end of the day, what is the actual action that's going to be happening? And that's going to be pretty much left up to the individual states to set the goals, set the targets, and decide how to get there.
And if you have a legislature that's not cooperating, you've got the kind of problems that we've had in California characteristically up until recently.
That's right. Take the example of just one point of the process of this plan, which is cutting carbon emissions, pricing them, actually, like California has done with its cap-and-trade program. Well, there's no cap-and-trade program in either Washington or Oregon. British Columbia did put a carbon tax in place way back in 2008, to their credit, but that's different from cap-and-trade. Oregon is sort of talking about a carbon tax, and Washington is talking about a cap-and-trade program, but they're not close to having them.
The governor also mentioned Monterey Shale when I asked him about fracking. There is no outright ban on fracking, and the fact is that many feel that there ought to be if we're really going to do something serious with this pact.
Yeah, California now has a law that was the first legislative attempt to regulate fracking in the state. But a lot of environmentalists were disappointed with it because they think at the last minute the industry got some changes through that leaves giant loopholes in it, which will allow a lot of fracking to be fast-tracked, actually, and permitted before the state gets a chance to complete a scientific study, which it's commissioned.
Which the governor said really ought to be completed and ought to be given time to be brought to fruition.
That's right. And there's no question that there's a huge potential for a lot of economic development in California because of fracking, which, by the way, is for oil, unlike most of the states we talk about, they're fracking for gas, for natural gas. In California, it's been going on for decades, but it's for oil.
Craig Miller, science editor at KQED, here with me in studio. Dan Jacobson is with us by phone. He's legislative director of Environment California. They're a statewide citizen-based environmental advocacy organization. Dan, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
And you're a lot more optimistic about this as a roadmap. Tell us why.
Well, you know, I think that any time that three governors and a premier from British Columbia get together and lay out a roadmap for how we're going to deal with climate change, it's a good start. I would agree with what the governor's saying is this is a modest step, but it's an important step.
And you would agree also maybe with Governor Jay Inglis from Washington, who says this message is going to go to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to go out to Washington, D.C. I'm not optimistic that Congress is going to act on it this year. But I think this is all part of a national and international working plan to have an impact on climate. And certainly the Congress is not the place that you would look to right now and go, we're solving climate change. But states all over the country and states all over the world and cities are taking this problem very seriously and taking big steps to help solve it. And whether they're doing it at the state level with passing bills to increase the amount of energy that they get from clean energy sources like wind and solar, or they're increasing the fuel efficiency of cars, this is where the action is really happening on solving climate. And what the governors did on Monday by signing on to that MOU is saying we're going to continue that progress.
Well, Governor Inslee's remarks as well as Governor Brown's remarks that we heard earlier seem to suggest that the legislatures will get the message and put this into law. And how confident can we really be that that's going to take place, particularly in places where there's a lot of partisan bickering and where there isn't necessarily a political party that's the same as the gubernatorial?
You know, that's going to be a challenge, but I think that the weight of a governor in any state carries a lot within the particular legislative body. And I think certainly here in California, if the governor is laying out this roadmap, I would hope that legislators would pick that up and say, this is good. If we want to have an impact on climate, let's take the lead of what the governor is now showing us.
Well, I'm sorry, finish your thought if you could.
I don't think that's going to be the same in every single state, and I don't think we should assume we're going to have the same progress in all 50 states as we're having here in California. But I think that California and the other western states should serve as a beacon to show that the businesses, the unions, the environmentalists, the elected officials can all get together and agree on big steps on how to reduce climate.
All right. I want to go to your calls and remind you that you can join this conversation a number of ways. You can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Let's begin with a caller named Marnie. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm wondering why there isn't more focus put on simply improving the traffic corridors in the Bay Area. Fully one-third of the population of California lives in the Bay Area. Similarly, traffic corridors in Los Angeles could be improved. And improving a traffic corridor up and down the Pacific Coast, it simply would not carry the majority of the traffic that we see along the Pacific Coast. By the way, I am from Vancouver, and I am familiar with traveling up and down between Vancouver and San Francisco, but I travel to Vancouver about once a year. I travel every day between San Francisco and San Jose because at the moment most of the jobs are concentrated in San Jose.
Yeah, thank you for the call. And Craig Martin, get some response from you, Craig? It's
a bit unclear what she means by improving the traffic corridors, but she did make a reference to having to commute a long way to get back and forth between home and work. And, of course, California has this law, SB 375, which is a big effort to try to reduce the number of vehicle miles traveled by locating jobs closer to transit and transit closer to jobs and getting people out of their cars. But like so many of these things, and it's an important step, by the way, because transportation is the biggest chunk of greenhouse gas emissions in California, cars and trucks and so on. But like so many of these things, right now at least, there aren't a lot of teeth in that law. All of the different various regions in the state have to come up with a plan for this, but how it's actually going to be enforced is unclear.
Again, Craig Miller here with us in studio, science editor of KQED. Industry has not pushed back on this to a great degree, Craig, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that. But there's been some statements that this is not necessarily going to be the best thing for the economies of the states.
You know, it's kind of funny, though. The initial take I'm getting from industry on this is a bit surprising because we're used to the knee-jerk against anything that has to do with that advances climate policy. But what I'm hearing is more a little bit of a sigh of relief because what the trade associations for industries in California are worried about is leakage, this idea that jobs would move, relocate to other states because California's going it alone with cap and trade, for example. So they'd actually like to see the neighboring states like Washington, Oregon, maybe even Nevada and some others tag along with some kind of a cap and trade policy because it would be less temptation for businesses to leave.
On the other hand, Dan Jacobson, we were talking to some industry people yesterday, and they were saying that it's going to be hard for national policy to follow, especially with cap and trade, but also renewable portfolio that's standard for the electricity sector.
Yeah, but California, don't forget, is right now the capital of clean energy. It's going to continue to be the capital for clean energy. And I think that the trade associations that you're hearing from that were once dominated by dirty energy companies and people that relied strictly on dirty energy are seeing a big shift within their own membership, and they have to start to reflect that shift. And so when you see the trade associations coming out and saying, you know, we actually are in favor of moving forward on climate or in favor of moving more on clean energy, they're looking at that from both a how do we start planning for 100 years out, but also how do we start planning for our own bottom line and seeing that clean energy in the long run is going to be saving them money.
And again, Dan Jacobson is Legislative Director of Environment California, and our next caller is Lisa. Lisa, you're on Forum. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Michael. Thank you. I wanted to speak to Governor Brown's point about where things were in 1992, and then we had 20 years of backlog in climate advancement, and now we're kind of coming back around to energy. I think this agreement or this accord is a great first step, and I also think we need to grow the political constituencies beyond enviros and clean energy folks to include demographics like parents and families. And, you know, there's a group called climateparents.org that we helped to start. But we believe you can get to 100% clean energy. Stanford professor Mark Jacobson was on Letterman last night talking about we have enough energy that's clean to power the globe seven times over. And finally, Michael, you had asked about the national landscape. And next Tuesday, the Environmental Protection Agency right here in San Francisco, but at their headquarters in Region 9, is having a hearing to talk about existing power plants. Because if we can make the cost of dirty energy just too expensive, we can scale up clean energy much more rapidly, and we need to put a price on carbon to do that.
Okay, Lisa, thank you. It's good to hear some upbeat, again, sanguine view of this. But here's John, who writes, this is more do-nothing rhetoric from do-nothing politicians. If Governor Brown were serious about the issue, he would lead a campaign for a substantial increase in the gasoline tax. This would be offset with a decrease in the sales tax, among the highest in the nation, to make it revenue neutral and politically feasible. A gas tax would be a substantive measure, unlike this symbolic act. Craig?
A lot of people, including some of the biggest proponents of climate change policy, James Hansen from NASA comes to mind, really don't like cap and trade. They favor a carbon tax. They say, look, if you're going to put a price on carbon, don't leave it up to the markets. Just put a price on carbon. You know, that's what they did in British Columbia. That's what they've done in Australia. And a lot of people think that is the better way to go.
Yeah, Hansen said that on the forum program here. And if I could go back to you, Dan Jacobson, with another email from a listener who writes, an open question is whether the pact is constitutional, given the Congress's exclusive power to regulate foreign trade and policy under the Commerce Clause.
I mean, again, to the constitutionality of it, I don't know, but we've seen states have been doing this, particularly on climate and on clean energy, for years. No one's challenged it. I think unless you're talking about specific trade agreements, that's where you get into the unconstitutionality of it. But states making agreements on how they want to handle issues like clean energy and other issues have been going on for 200 years. So I don't think this is a constitutional issue, and I would argue that, you know, if you want to look at the climate tax, you know, sort of the carbon tax issue as well, I agree that would be a great thing, but I spend almost every waking day in the Sacramento legislature. I can't count to 41 or 21 on how to do that, so it's sort of a good idea, but there needs to be much more political will built out, even within California, to make that happen.
Well, the real question I get, well, let me get another caller on here, actually, from Sacramento. Bonnie, join us. Hi.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Bonnie Holmstead, and I happen to work for the American Lung Association, but I also have two children. I'm concerned about their future. But I just wanted to bring up the public health perspective here. We really applaud, you know, I applaud, and our organization really applauds Governor Brown for what he's done with this climate pact and the other governors, because we're really concerned about all those individuals out there with asthma and suffering from lung and heart illnesses. And global warming is, of course, it's the big public health issue of our time. And with these measures of cleaner fuels and cleaner zero-emission vehicles and clean electricity, we can really cut down on asthma and heart and lung diseases and bring a healthier future. So it's a tremendous benefit for everybody in California.
Well, we thank you for those comments. Public health issue, the governor called it a major existential issue of our time. Craig, real teeth in this, though, do you think?
Well, of course, what Bonnie's talking about are the so-called co-benefits. You know, it's just by happy coincidence, if you take the measures you need to take to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you also cut down on other types of conventional air pollution, which is makes for a healthier environment. No teeth in this. Again, it's up to each governor to keep the ball rolling and premier in their individual state and province.
Craig Miller, we thank you, science editor for KQED. Change your last name and your title. Dan Jacobson is the legislative director of Environment California. We also spoke, of course, with Governor Brown, and we're going to speak with Dean Kamen, who is getting a humanitarian award from the Tech Museum, and we'll find out about, well, amazing number of inventions that this man is responsible for, including the Segway. When we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny.